When you reference the record, this one's a pretty big one. So my colleagues, I'm sure, have memorized it. I have not. So please give us a record cite when you refer to the record. And please recall that rebuttal is for rebuttal only. So with that, we will call case number 19-20841, SED Holdings versus TM Property Solutions. And we'll begin with Mr. Reagan.
Your Honor, may it please the court. There's old axiom that's applicable to this case. You live by the sword. Here, SED made an intentional choice to intervene in the Tarrant County lawsuit, assert a declaratory judgment action seeking clear negotiable title to 1,235 loans, each and every loan involved in this case. SED then settled with Biltmore Funding too. But at that point, they didn't do what most litigants do. They didn't non-suit their case without prejudice or dismiss their case. Instead, they agreed to cooperate with Biltmore too in getting a judgment. SED didn't went to trial, a trial on the merits with regard to their declaratory judgment claim. SED then submitted proposed findings of fact and conclusions of law that included fraud findings, which they now admit in their brief that they never said for in Tarrant County. SED made the choice to intervene in Fort Worth, assert a declaratory judgment claim for each and every loan that's at issue in this case. They settled with Biltmore too. They didn't dismiss their case. They instead elected to go to a trial on the merits, where they submitted proposed findings of fact and conclusions of law that had all these fraud findings that they admit now in their brief that they never pled for. And then SED got a judgment, including all those fraud findings, which they never pled for. And they took those findings and they wielded them in North Carolina. They wielded them back in Tarrant County on the second lawsuit, and they wielded them throughout this case here.
So, I'm sorry, I've forgotten your name, and it's not on the screen. Mr. Reagan,
yes.
You were talking, you're representing the Highland defendants. I take it, I'm just trying to keep track of who's representing.
Yes, Your Honor.
Lots of parties. And we're talking about res judicata here. So it seems to me that everybody agrees that the Texas law of res judicata applies and not the federal law. One thing that's required is that the previous lawsuit arise out of the same transaction. Isn't that right?
The same transaction or series of transactions,
okay,
yes.
Okay, well, so maybe that's your answer, but it seems to me that the Tarrant County lawsuit is about a specific number of loans, not all of the loans, but only some of the loans, the Biltmore II loans, which is 400 and something loans. That's question one. Doesn't that defeat the application of res judicata that we're not really talking about all the loans, we're only talking about some of them? And then question two is, do we have to be concerned about how SED intervened in that lawsuit? Because if it intervened in the Tarrant County lawsuit sort of as aligned with Three Star, merely to protect its interests in that, the loans, the Biltmore II loans, then is it really required under Texas law that it bring every claim it could have brought against Three Star, given the posture in which it intervened? So that's question two. What do you make of all that?
Sure. So to answer your first question, yes, if the Tarrant County lawsuit involved the same transaction or series of transactions or the same nucleus of operative facts as this case, then res judicata applies. Two points to that. One, their petition intervention mentioned the 1,235 loans and they referenced the specific agreement that we're litigating today. But secondly, I don't think it matters if they only litigated the 473 loans with Three Star in Tarrant County. Under Texas law, you have to bring all your claims that you have against that party, including those claims that you could have asserted or you might have asserted or could have asserted with reasonable diligence.
Even if they're just cross claims against a party that you're aligned with? In other words, if I come in, I'm aligned with Three Star, I have to bring cross claims against them? In other words, all the claims that are the subject of this federal lawsuit, is that Texas law?
Well, to answer your question, one, SED's admitted throughout this case that they were adversaries with Three Star.
The first time they ever said they were quote unquote co-parties that would be able to assert a cross-claim was in their brief in this case. But they intervene. And under Texas law, I believe it's a Ford Motor case, the intervener in situations like this seeking declaratory relief, seeking affirmative relief, they're aligned as the plaintiff. So if SCD had won their case, Three Star wouldn't have got any of the loans, or Biltmore 2 wouldn't have got the loans. They certainly were not aligned. And I believe they concede in their briefing in the district court below that there was no doubt, or it's beyond doubt, that they were adversaries with Three Star.
Find that for you. They're required to bring claims in the Tarrant County lawsuit that were already pending in another lawsuit, say maybe the Harris County lawsuit. They had the same claims. If we assume that, if we agree with you that they should have brought these claims in Tarrant County, weren't those claims already pending in Harris County? And shouldn't that matter for purposes of res judicata?
The claims were, I believe, pending in Harris County, and they were pending in North Carolina. But under this court's precedent, I believe the Cox case and the Spoke Foods case, that doesn't matter. In those cases, Cox and Smoked Foods, those plaintiffs made the same arguments. We had a pending case, or we had a first filed case. The remedy there is to file a motion to abate and insert the dominant jurisdiction of whatever court you claim is the dominant jurisdiction. But once you intervene and you join the lawsuit, at that point, they were adverse to Three Star, or they've admitted they were adverse to Three Star. And at that point, they had to assert not only the claims they filed, but any claims they could have filed with reasonable diligence. It doesn't matter if they were already pending. And that's under Cox and Smoked Foods. And that's been the law in the Fifth Circuit for 35 years.
Well, one question I have is, it seems like in that you have that chart on like page 2 of your yellow brief that seems to be focusing on kind of their admission. So almost never mind all this other stuff. You've admitted, you've argued when it benefited you, you argued X, and now you've decided to say not X. Is that part of your argument, or are you solely relying on the discussion you've just had with Judge Duncan?
No, I believe my argument is threefold. One, we have the admissions were filed in this case in Harris County before removal. We have the petition intervention that's in the record that shows what the claims are. But the third prong, which covers all the bases, is what happened at trial. I believe last year in Butler versus Endeavor Air, this court said, albeit in a per curiam opinion, that if the plaintiff concedes that these allegations are the same allegations before, then res judicata applies. And here in this case, we asked Mr. Cyphers on cross-examination. We went through the litany of fraud findings from the Tarrant County judge, and we asked him, are these the same allegations you're making in this case? And he said yes. But more importantly, how the evidence at trial, what happened at trial, shows that this is the same nucleus of operative facts or the same transaction, is they relied on the Tarrant County judgment, opening, case in chief, closing. They brought Mr. Fleet. But more importantly, their damages model, their $4.3 million on Plaintiff's Exhibit 247, included the $1.5 million that was paid to Biltmore Funding too. So you take all that into consideration, Mr. Cyphers' admission, their heavily, heavy reliance on the fraud finding from opening to close, and to the fact that their damages model necessarily included the money that went to Biltmore Funding too. There could be no credible dispute that this involves the same transaction or the same subject matter as the lawsuit in Tarrant County. And if you look at their Second Amendment complaint, they say point blank, the Tarrant County judgment is res judicata as to Three Star and anyone attempting to stand in Three Star's places. SCD has admitted that this is the same transaction. SCD has admitted that the Highland Group is in privity with Three Star. All the elements of res judicata have been established as a matter of law, either by their admissions, their pleadings in Tarrant County, or what happened in the trial in this case. And the only real issue that's really in dispute is the issue of privity. Beyond the, we put in our admission that you referenced a chart that they've admitted that we were in privity when it was beneficial to them. But there's other legal bases for establishing privity that we put forth in our brief. including the special relationship test, which this circuit, this court has adopted in somewhat similar context, and other federal circuits have applied.
Who do we have to find is in privity with whom, if in order to agree with you on the privity point? Who are we looking for privity?
The Three Star Properties and the Highland defendants, all the Highland defendants.
Okay.
Because SED is alleged that we're all one entity, that Highland has controlled the entire transaction, that Three Star was a shell company, that Three Star was a mere instrumentality.
Forgive me for my ignorance, I get the parties confused a little bit. Do the Highland defendants, does that include Biltmore II, who was the plaintiff in Tarrant County?
Does not include Biltmore II. They were not a party to this case by virtue of their settlement with SED.
Okay, all right.
Let me turn to something else because you're starting to get a little bit low on time. I want to ask you about the sort of excessive amount of the judgment argument. Let's just assume, arguendo, that we reject your arguments on the merits of the liability and we turn to the damages. Can you walk me through sort of the math of, again, assuming arguendo, which I know you disagree with, that everything else is affirmed, what would be the math of the subtraction from the judgment that you would do? If we didn't grant a new trial, we just wanted to do math. Walk me through that, please.
Sure. As we put forth in our brief, there were innumerable representations in pleadings, motions, the joint pretrial order, every witness SED put on the stand. They all said their damages was between $4 and $4.6 million. I believe plaintiff's exhibit 247 put it at 4.3 and change. So that's kind of like the ceiling, 4.3 million, 4.6. Then we start getting into subtractions. Brown and Associates paid 1.25 million for a settlement. So that's a credit. Mr. Dykes paid, I believe, $425,000. So that's a credit. SED sold the Biltmore II loan separate and apart from this case, and they recovered $551,578 that we did not get a credit for. And then, so we get down to, I believe that's around about $2.3 million. And then the question becomes, do you take off the $2 million that they sent in July 2014 because they should have known the red flag or the lack of justifiable reliance when Mr. Johnson sent them the servicing agreement that says someone else owned these loans? Or do you take off the $1.5 million that Mr. Fleet undisputedly got, undisputedly kept, that no one on our side got a penny of? So we got about $2.3 million minus either the two or the 1.5. So that's where I would put the math. It ends up around.
Can you walk me back to what the judge actually granted in terms of the principal amount? Because I understand your argument about the lost profits and that minus. But I thought there was a $2 million in there that you were also taking out. That's a different $2 million than the $2 million you just mentioned? A lot of $2 million floating around.
Sure. At trial, the closing, they said it was $10.68 million, which they've said was the 4.6 plus the $4 million lost profits plus the second $2 million they sent in July 2014. Post-trial, and in our brief here, we said, well, you're counting that second $2 million twice.
It's the same $2 million, but it's counted several. So what you're saying is, from the judge's judgment, you would take out the $2 million and the $4 million because of the duplicity and or duplication and also the lost profits. But then of the 4.6, you're saying, on the merits of the 4.6, you should take out the two, because they already knew all the problems by the time they got there.
Correct.
Okay.
And I want to jump to the end of my argument here about why the judgment should be reversed as to Three Star as well. Again, SED treated us all as one. The Three Star and the Highland defendants are interwoven. SED says, you know, Three Star is a shell company, a mere instrumentality, and Mr. Highland controlled. So under this, the Texas law and this court's law, the court has discretion, I believe, or has the option to reverse and ask the Three Star as well, if it will afford us full and equitable relief. And we're all here today because there's about $2.5-3 million in the bankruptcy trustee's bank account that we're fighting over. So if the judgment's reversed to, as to us, reverse and render, we're take nothing, but not the three star, well, SCD is going to get the lion's share of the money in the bankruptcy case because they'll have the larger claim, the $9.3 million, if the judgment against three star is left undisturbed. And I think that three star should be reversed as well. I guess reserve the rest of my time for rebuttal.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Drez, your turn.
Thank you, Your Honor. David Drez on behalf of SCD Holdings. And I'll jump right to those matters that the court focused on, the first of which being res judicata. And the context and the timing of this intervention is important to the court's consideration. In December of 2014, SCD sued Three Star, Mr. Johnson, TM Property, Highland, and Home Servicing in North Carolina. The next month, January of 2015, Three Star filed suit against SCD in Harris County. And then in April of 2015, Biltmore Funding II, a non-party in the proceedings below, at least in the district court, filed its declaratory judgment claim against Three Star in Tarrant County. 7 months after that was when SCD filed its intervention and asserted a competing declaratory judgment claim that was reduced to judgment in June of 2016. And I want to focus the court's attention on September of 2016. September of 2016 is when Biltmore, and that would be Biltmore Funding One, Mr. Highland's company, and TM Property filed their intervention in the Harris County case. And there they filed an intervention and a motion to substitute, essentially asserting that they could step into the shoes of Three Star and pursue the breach of contract claims against SED. And the hearing on that substitution and intervention is found at the Record on Appeal at 13636 through 38. Those are the most important portions of that hearing. And there the court will see the Highland Group takes the complete opposite position on this issue of res judicata and on the issue of the import of the Tarrant County action and the judgment in that action and SCD's role in that action. The important part is to consider also that when that hearing was set to reconvene on September 29th of 2016, that is the date on which the involuntary bankruptcy was commenced against Three Star by Biltmore and TM Property. And I'll stop right there to make an important point. How could a party that asserts an involuntary or brings an involuntary bankruptcy against another party ever be in privity with them? It doesn't seem logical.
The problem is y'all are the ones who say they are. I mean, I think they wouldn't have thought so, but given where we are today, I mean, the underlying fraud that brings us here today was Three Star. And so unless Highland is responsible for that, they shouldn't be here, right? So hasn't that been your position? And so they're now saying, we may not have thought so, but you thought so, and so here we are.
SED has certainly taken that position, Your Honor. Admittedly, in the res judicata argument was kind of fighting both ways throughout. And it's complicated by the fact that you had two pending cases already, that you had an intervention against the one non-party involved in the underlying district court proceedings. And then likewise, you have a default judgment. And once the involuntary is commenced, Three Star is never really in a position to take any positions on the issue. So it doesn't fit cleanly into any of the res judicata precedent that I've seen before this court. But I would say that privity is determined by the court is a matter of law. It's not a matter of soundbite, because the soundbite argument could, I think, go either way. And the one case that is relied on for this notion that a party can admit privity is the TransClean case out of the Federal Circuit, which was a different situation. That was a patent infringement case against a manufacturer in the first case. The second case was against sellers of the allegedly infringing device or apparatus. And there it was held to be judicial estoppel because the the plaintiff in that case took the position that the manufacturer and the sellers were in privity. And so it was a judicial estoppel issue.
So Mr. Drez, I mean, I'm glad you brought up judicial estoppel, because I'll be honest with you, I've gotten kind of tired of hearing the parties say, well, you said this, and then I said this, and you took this position. And that's all very interesting. But unless we're talking about judicial estoppel, then I'm not all that interested in what the parties said. I mean, I know there's judicial estoppel as to one issue, but I don't think it's this issue. So what I would appreciate is if you just walk through, I assume you agree that the Texas law of res judicata applies here.
I do, Your Honor.
Okay, so if you would just walk through, I was asking your opposing counsel, was this or was it not the same transaction or series of transactions in the Tarrant County lawsuit as in the present federal lawsuit? Why don't you speak to that? I mean, I assume you disagree with your colleague on that.
I do, Your Honor. My understanding of the question is, did the second action involve the same claims that were raised or could have been raised in Tarrant County? And so in talking about the Tarrant County action, there is nothing that required SED to sue those additional entities or assert those additional claims. SED had already asserted those claims. It was intervening to protect its right. Tarrant County was Biltmore Funding 2 and 3-Star concerning their loan sale agreement. And Biltmore 2 was the only entity not controlled by Highland. SED contested Biltmore 2's claim of title to those loans as collateral for the transaction between Biltmore 2 and 3-Star. And at the time, one thing that's important, Your Honor, is SED had just filed a second show cause motion related to the injunction in North Carolina. So at that time, it had a decision to make regarding what it would do in relation to these loans that were part of the bigger transaction, but they weren't the transaction. SED was not aware that these multiple transactions were going on behind the scenes as it was entering into its agreement. So I don't think it was the same transaction. Is it related? Certainly. But as it pertains to transactions between 3-Star and SED, it was not the same transaction.
So I understand there was a judgment in Biltmore 2's favor arising out of the Tarrant County lawsuit, correct?
Correct, Your Honor.
Okay, was there any judgment in favor of SED in that lawsuit?
There were, and to be fair to the Highland Group, they make an issue of two findings that relate to fraud in the court's findings. There was not a judgment that granted any relief in favor of SED that came out of the Tarrant County case.
Okay.
Have I answered Your Honor's question?
I think so. It's a complicated issue.
Yeah. So I understand judicial estoppel is one category that's relevant, but I also do think people's omissions matter. So I want to get back to the question of the yellow brief chart. Can you please respond to that? Because you just say that's just snippets, but can you please respond a little more specifically to that? You know what I'm talking about, the yellow brief chart, from page 2 to 5, where they go through, this is what you said when it benefited you, now you're saying the opposite. Can you respond to that?
And Your Honor, I think that cuts both ways. I think that, and that's why I identify that portion of the record, because you have the Highland parties saying the Tarrant County judgment means nothing, SED got no relief, it can't be used. So you have parties offering, I think, competing interpretations. What I would tell the court is, the question is, do those admissions establish privity? Because in like the EEOC versus Jefferson Dental case, in that case, the court talks about privity for res judicata purposes under Texas law. And it talks about the fact that there are essentially three things that can establish privity for the purposes of res judicata. The first one is control. And the question there was, as applied to this case, is did the Highland Group actively and openly participate in the prior proceeding to the extent that it was clear they had the right to direct them, much like the EEOC was held to have done in the underlying case there? There's no evidence that the Highland Group had any involvement in that case, such that they were directing the activities of 3-Star. The next part of the test is representation of interest. Did the Highland Group share an identity of interest in the basic legal right that was the subject of the Tarrant County litigation? And the answer is no. They had two other loan sale agreements that they were direct parties to. The Tarrant County case involved the one entity that the Highland Group did not control, so they did not have an identity of interest there. And the third prong of the privity analysis is successor in interest. Does the Highland Group derive its claims through a party to the prior action? And the answer there again is no. So, Your Honor, that was a long way of trying to answer your question, but my point was, obviously, it's always
important. You're saying the control has to be of the litigation and not of the litigator.
No, I think it's of the litigant, Your Honor. That's my read of the test.
Isn't that y'all's whole case? Is that Highland's the real fraudster here, even though the words were said by Three Star and not by Highland?
That is part of the conspiracy claim, Your Honor. But as it, I think my view of the inquiry for res judicata purposes is, in the Tarrant County litigation, was the Highland Group exercising control over the conduct of Three Star? And the way Three Star defended or chose to present itself in that litigation.
That's why I asked the question. Is your argument that they had to control the litigation, or is it your argument that they have to control the litigant? Because it seems like in this case, if Highland's not controlling Three Star, you lose. We're done. So that is separate, I think, from the question of controlling the litigation. I understand that, but I'm just trying to understand your argument. You're saying they have to control the litigation and not just the litigant.
Well, I think it's control of the litigant's conduct in the litigation.
Okay.
Such that essentially the litigant is standing in their shoes because they are directing what the litigant in that case does and does not do. That was my read of how the EEOC versus Jefferson Dental case describes privity for the purposes of res judicata.
Does it matter in what capacity SCD intervened in Tarrant County as a plaintiff, as a defendant? Does that matter to the res judicata?
You know, Your Honor, honestly, I'm not certain, because I don't know that SED necessarily intervened. Three Star simply didn't, it was a general denial. I don't think the Ford Motor Company case that was cited by counsel, it doesn't say that an intervention is a plaintiff. It talks about plaintiff status for the under the wrongful death statute specifically, and whether a forum non-convenes argument is available. It doesn't speak or lay out a blanket rule as to plaintiff status. I mean, I think if SCD wouldn't have intervened and directly asserted certain claims against Three Star over and above this limited, isolated claim about title to only a portion of the loans, it would certainly be a different discussion, but that's not the reality. The reality was there was a competing claim as it pertained to what Biltmore Funding 2 was asserting.
And well, they were asserting title to 473 loans, right? And what was SCD's position when it intervened?
It was contesting the title that Biltmore Funding 2 was asserting, based on the fact that SCD essentially claimed a superior interest in those loans, or thought it had one. And those two parties resolved their disputes.
By Three Star, the same representations as to the other 800 loans, right?
There was some, certainly SED contended it had ownership of those loans based on its loan sale agreement with Three Star. Yes, Your Honor.
All right, let me ask you something we haven't talked about, which is the home servicing contract issue. How do you get around the jury charge that expressly talks about the written contract that's got that jury waiver and all that, that written contract, as opposed to some sort of oral agreement?
Your Honor, the loan sale agreement between Three Star and SED said that the parties agreed the loans would be serviced under this existing agreement that was between Home Servicing and TM Property. It didn't say that the parties were going to be parties to that agreement or that SED was going to be a party. It's called the Residential Service, RSSA is how the parties refer to it in their briefing. Nonetheless, it disclaims third-party beneficiary status. I don't think there's anything sufficient in the record to show that SED agreed or could have agreed to the jury waiver such that it would be effective. The testimony from both Home Servicing and SED was that the parties had an oral agreement, that there was a meeting of the minds as to their agreement. And remember,
Home Servicing, that's an entirely new contract, because it sounds like they just adopted all the terms and conditions. And I realize you're arguing that the jury waiver wasn't one of them, but even the jury verdict form, questions 2 and 3 reference the servicing agreement with Home Servicing. The, as though it's referring to a particular agreement, not some agreement that's found. I mean, there's no interrogatory that asks if there was an agreement prior to these two. It just says the servicing agreement.
Correct, Your Honor. And I think the testimony, both from Home Servicing and from SED, was that the parties had a meeting on the minds that the loans were to be serviced under the general terms as provided for in that predecessor agreement.
But didn't that predecessor agreement say there's to be no third parties involved in that agreement? It was only Home Servicing and TM Property Solutions?
It does say that, Your Honor. And that's why I think the jury waiver was not effective as to SED. I think they could agree on things such as what exactly Home Servicing would do, the rate at which it would be done. And certainly there was enough from the Home Servicing perspective to claim that SED owed Home Servicing the charges for having those loans serviced.
The jury was asked about that agreement. I mean, the question was, SED Holdings alleges Home Servicing breached the existing agreement to service SED Holdings loans under the contract between Home Servicing and TM Property Solutions. So whatever the pros and cons of that, that's what they answered. So you're bound by that. And they're not saying that the jury charge was wrong. They're saying, having given the jury charge that way, that's the contract you're subject to, for better or for worse. Why isn't that true?
Your Honor, my recollection again of the LSA is it basically says how the loans are to be serviced. And it says under the existing agreement. The parties never went beyond that. The loan sale agreement is only between SED and 3-Star. There was never a signed contract between Home Servicing and SED. So they had a meeting of the minds of some sort, and that's what the testimony bore out. There was certainly never a document signed that says we agree to all the terms and conditions of the predecessor agreement, at least not one signed between SED and Home Servicing.
Is there anything in the record that suggests that this is a new agreement? Because it seems like they're talking about just incorporating the existing agreement. It sounds like you're cherry picking parts of the agreement that you want to have operative and disavowing things such as the waiver of the jury.
I think the only thing being disavowed, Your Honor, is the jury waiver. I think the parties had an implied agreement.
It's the only part you don't like. Well, let me, you're running out of time, so I want to turn to the last point, which is this excessive verdict or the excessive judgment concept. Again, let's assume, arguendo, we agree with you on liability, go with you on all of that, but we disagree on the issue of the judgment. Talk to me through that. So the lost profits, until the closing arguments, where in the pleadings, in the joint pretrial motion order, in any of the documents in the case, where had you all taken the position that you were seeking lost profits?
The only position I'm aware of, Your Honor, was in the testimony. Mr. Edens testified, and that's in the record at 11438 through 39. And it was questioning by opposing counsel, where he was asked 4 times over the course of 2 pages to confirm that SED's expectation was to make $4 million on this transaction. That's how this came into the
to the trial.
That is not proof of lost profits. I mean, you know, Texas has very strict rules on proving lost profits. And it's not just enough to go, wow, when I invest in this company next door, I'm going to make $1 million. Now I can sue for it. I mean, it's not like that. So asking somebody their expectations for whatever reason you might ask that is not the same thing as finding lost profits. And don't you have to have asked for that in order to recover that?
And Your Honor, I'm not aware of a specific claim in the pretrial order of pleadings where SED said that. But as to where the number came from, it came from that provided for.
I understand that. Okay. I understand that it was mentioned there. But what I'm saying is nowhere was that pled, nowhere was that asserted, nowhere was that argued as lost profits until that closing argument. You show up and go, well, now we want another $4 million. That's never been mentioned before. How can you do that?
As to the court's question of whether it was mentioned before, it was not.
Okay. So I have one last question with regard to the damages. Why shouldn't the $551,000 that was received from the Biltmore II entity be subtracted out?
I think that could be properly remitted, Your Honor. I don't think SED is going to sit here and die on that hill. I could see it the court's way, and we could see it the other way too. It was certainly discussed with the court previously and before judgment was ultimately entered.
Well, I mean, that's helpful. I also read a footnote in your brief as saying that $2 million of the damages are duplicative. Isn't that correct?
So long as we're talking about the 10.63, Your Honor.
Yeah.
I believe there's a legitimate argument that may have been a double count.
Okay.
When counsel delivered closing. And I think I can't direct the court to the exact page and footnote, but that is an accurate reading, Your Honor.
How do you respond to I know you're out of time, but I'd like to know how you respond to the rest of the subtractions that Mr. Reagan advocated. There were various settlements that he was advocating. I'm just trying to get to a math number.
Your Honor, I think if you take the alleged double count out, you end up at $7,005,000.
But we still have in there the lost profit component, right?
Okay, but I'm asking about settlement numbers. We talked about the lost profits. We talked about the 2 million. What about his argument of settlements or payments?
I think aside from the Biltmore II settlement, Your Honor, they were all accounted for, except there's one, which I don't believe there to be disagreement on. But if you took the $2 million alleged double count out, it would reduce the judgment to $7,005,000. That would include all settlement credits. It would not include the Biltmore II amount, which has not been previously applied. If you took that as well, you would reduce the judgment to around $6.5 million.
And that's it? There's no other settlement credit? I thought there was also a 425.
That includes that number, Your Honor.
Okay. But then if we also disagreed on the lost profits, that'd be another $4 million off of that.
Correct. If the court saw it that way, it would.
Okay. All right. Thank you. Your time has expired. And now we will turn to Mr. Johnson for your whole 2 minutes to talk about your client Nations.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court, Andrew Johnson on behalf of Howard L. Nations Professional Corporation. I'll make it very quick. I think the easiest way to affirm the judgment is to look at the holding escrow agreement on page 5,237. My client, the Nations Law Firm, is being sued for apparently authorizing Mark Dykes to become the escrow agent on this. And when push comes to shove, when the actual escrow agreement is signed, Mark Dykes signs it unequivocally plain on its face. In his individual capacity, it doesn't mention the Nations Law Firm at all. They talk about the loan sale agreement that mentions the Nations Law Firm, but the loan sale agreement is a contract between 3Star and SED. We didn't write it. We didn't even know about it, the Nations Law Firm. And for apparent authority, you only look at what the principal apparently authorized. If we didn't know anything about the LSA, if we didn't draft it, if we didn't approve it, then it's irrelevant to us. I think the only thing left that they point to potentially is the website. Well, like I just said, even if the website apparently authorizes something, the hold at the end of the day, the holding escrow agreement negates that, and it's only on behalf of Mark Dykes. But regardless, as the judge found below in her order, the website clearly shows that the Nation's Law Firm is a litigation firm, that Mark Dykes is a litigator. It doesn't say anything in there about transactional services. So that on its face is not sufficient to show apparent authority. You couple that with the fact that we didn't even know the Nation's Law Firm didn't even know that Mark Dykes was involved in this transaction at all. It's just, I believe that the court should affirm the summary judgment below.
All right, thank you. We have your argument. All right, Mr. Reagan, you have a big 3 minutes to sum it up.
Yes, Your Honor. First, as to Mr. Drez left off at the end of his argument, saying that the only thing that I believe SCD is disavowing at this time is the jury trial waiver. I was there for the post-trial briefing where they said we were never a party to that agreement. And at page 16 of their brief, SCD argues the only agreement between Home Servicing and SCD was the agreement SCD sued on and tried to the jury, not the residential special servicing agreement between TM Property and Home Servicing. So post-trial and then in their briefing before this court, they have disavowed the entire agreement. Yet they still want the judgment based on a breach of that agreement. Again, simply put, they can't have it both ways.
Home Servicing is suing on the same agreement ostensibly, right? There's cross claims on that. So what agreement is Home Servicing sued on?
We sued on the residential special servicing agreement that the parties all said they were going to go by.
Okay. All right. But to which SCD Holdings is not a party, right?
Correct. But in their complaint, paragraphs, I believe, 81 and 177 of their second amended complaint, they said they agreed to assume to operate under the existing agreement between TM and Home Servicing. That's why it was in the jury instruction.
Basically adopted is what you're saying.
Correct, John. As to the
respond to the numbers on the excessive point that he just made, he said that all the settlement credits have already been made except possibly the Biltmore one.
That is incorrect. The only settlement credit that was applied was the Brown Associates $1.25 million. So it went from, I believe, $10.6 million to whatever the number is now. They subtracted the Brown Associates. There is an additional settlement by Mark Dykes of $425,000, but that was after the notice of appeal was filed. So that's not reflected in the judgment, but the parties agreed that the Highland Group is entitled to that offset, but it's just not in the judgment. But there's an additional $551,578 that SCD got from the sale of the Biltmore Funding 2 loans that the district court said, I believe at least twice, I'm not going to let them have a double recovery. We'll take care of that at the time of judgment. We brought it up. It never got taken care of. So they've double recovered that $551,578, about $500,000.
And one other thing, do you want to respond to the judicial estoppel piece of the res judicata argument? Do you think that their admissions are binding only if they meet the test of judicial estoppel?
I'm not quite sure I understand the question, but the admissions should be binding. They made them repeatedly. But they talked about controlling the litigant, controlling the litigation. We didn't really argue that in our brief as a basis for privity. We argued admissions, the special relationship that they alleged that we're all one and the same, and that there were co-conspirators. And the final point I want to make on that is the hook in the judgment is the $10.6 million finding on the conspiracy to the fraud. So to the fraud and the conspiracy, we have to have a primary actor, and that's 3-Star. And that's the basis of the conspiracy. So we did acts allegedly in the furtherance of the conspiracy with the primary actor. And they already had that judgment against 3-Star. But we're just not, even though we weren't parties to the Tarrant County lawsuit, so we're not bound by that. So we get to assert any defense the primary actor could have asserted to the fraud claim. And that's what we did. And so whether or not they brought other parties into the case or didn't bring parties, they intervened, they asserted affirmative claims. There were no cross claims. It says petition intervention and not a cross claim.
They should have brought all the claims they had at the time, and they didn't, and they have to live with that.
I will say there's plenty of briefing in this case. We appreciate that. We have that. We have your arguments. Appreciate that as well. And so this case is now under submission. Ms. Trice, we'll let you let the lawyers go, and we'll take just a minute between this case and the next one.